Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the death of the convention and its evolution into this virtual world. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKinney.
Well, Dennis, as you know, last month I was traveling, and so I spent some time in Portland, where things are a little crazy thanks to the state of the world when this is recorded.
Yeah, well, Portland's been crazy for a long time, so that's really nothing new. It's just gotten a bit crazier.
It has been. You know, there have been some protests and some just craziness in general. But the long story short was that I was not really in a good position to do anything remotely with the website. So I know you got a chance to go off and do something kind of cool with the Treefort guys.
Yeah, I was on the Hackfort Live podcast with Sean and Mike. They're the director and co-director of Hackfort. Hackfort itself is a fort or a subdivision of the Treefort Music Festival, which is kind of like a South by Southwest as they're migrating around the Southwest. And they make a stop in Boise to go and play some music.
Except for this year, because again, the world is not this normal, crazy, safe place. Treefort didn't happen.
Treefort was supposed to happen in March. And then, of course, everything got locked down. So they rescheduled it for September, which it would be next month by the time that this was recorded. But then, yeah, since things have not gotten better because of Portland, got postponed to next year.
Well, not just Portland, but the world in general.
Yeah.
So if you are thinking about attending Treefort or Hackfort, which is something I would encourage you to look into if you're in the Northwest area, mm-hmm. of course, it's going to be in September of 2021 now.
Yes.
So how did your involvement with Hackfort go? Since obviously they must not be doing the actual fort.
No, they're not doing the fort portion of it, but Sean and Mike are really promoting the Hackfort culture. So they're trying to keep the Hackfort side of things alive.
That makes sense.
And they decided that they were going to do something like we're doing and podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So they had a couple, it was like 7 episodes where they just kind of started streaming on Twitch and just doing something technical. Like one of their episodes was migrating Mike's computer into a new case, which I thought was kind of fun. I got to watch.
We've certainly been there.
I got to watch a lot of that. And, they had some issues trying to get the machine to run afterwards, and it turned out there was an RGB cable that was inserted incorrectly.
And that kept it from
starting, supposedly.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's basic troubleshooting 101. You just check and double check all your connections, right?
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like I may have to go back and watch that episode because I did not know that USB cable is going to keep you from booting your PC, and I think that would have got me.
Well, and one thing I did notice, and I mentioned this to Mike afterwards, was that the memory, when he had it installed into his PC, it was in single channel mode, which is kind of like a rookie mistake. It's like, right. Well, the
easy
manual, manual's never very clear on where you're supposed to put the memory modules. Mm-hmm. But he had it in single channel mode. And I'm like, well, that's not going to really impact performance that much. But if you put them in correctly, you get dual channel and performance potential.
Well, it's definitely not a showstopper, but that does kind of lead you back to what kind of machine they are used to building, because that was a thing for a while when we had single channel.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a fairly new change between the dual channel and the 2 and 4 and quad and all that kind of stuff.
Fairly new as in maybe 15 years?
Yeah, but if you didn't know, the machine still runs, right?
Yeah, it still runs. Hackfort Live, we basically talk tech. So they gave, and I'll put a link down in the show notes to the Twitch broadcast that we did, talking about, how I got started with Ninja Lane and then with Hardware Asylum and some of my computer background, you know, like, when did you get started with computers sort of thing?
Longtime listeners have heard some of those stories, but if you were new, that might be fun to check out.
Yeah, and then I bought along 3 pieces of hardware.
Now, this is the part I thought was interesting because we've been doing this for a long time, but you brought out some hardware that I had not seen.
I went into the archive, so to speak. And as Darren knows, I have quite a collection. So one of the items I brought in was basically a trophy piece of kit. And that was the GTX 780 MOA edition of the Lightning card.
A definite unicorn, if I recall.
Yeah, like one of 20 in the world. And chances are the other 19 have been destroyed and are thrown away.
And if I remember correctly, that one had some pretty packaging and some special goodies, right?
Nope. had none of that stuff. Because what? This was the MOA edition. This was the video card designed to be completely unlocked the way that MSI would want to build a video card had NVIDIA not said, no, you have to do it this way because it's our chip. The VRM was completely unlocked. It came with a little controller board so you can control the voltages.
That's what I was thinking of, yeah.
And you could change the V-core, you could change the memory voltage and the PCI Express voltage. You use software to go and change the clocks. And it was designed for LN2 overclocking. I brought this card home and I put an air cooler on it and I actually had to have fans on the thing because it would overheat.
So definitely not the daily driver that you would normally use. Did it use a special driver, speaking of drivers, to get overclocked?
No, it was basically an NVIDIA card. The only difference was that the VRM was specially tuned for overclocking.
Well, that's a cool piece of hardware, but that's not the one I was thinking of.
Well, one of the other items I brought was the EVGA ePower 5, which is basically an external VRM. So if you have a video card that has a crappy VRM that you can't overclock, like maybe a GTX 1050 Ti that we got a record at the Hackfort exposition floor. Remember that card?
Oh, nice. Hackfort reference. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had it under liquid nitrogen, but the fact that it was voltage locked meant that we couldn't put in enough power to actually get more than 100 megahertz out of it. Well, if we cut off the back of the card and solder this V-Power onto it, then we can feed as much voltage into it as we want.
Not something that you want to do every day, that's for sure.
No, it's again designed for overclocking. And since it's an external power board, it's not tied or restricted by any AMD or NVIDIA requirements.
Well, if you feel like playing Frankenstein, if I'm not mistaken, you can still buy those out on the open market.
Yep. And I think I got mine on sale for like, what is it, $150 or something like that?
That might be a dangerous toy to play with, but that's still not what I was thinking of.
Oh, you're talking about the crazy motherboard that I brought in.
Yes.
It was a Foxconn WinFast board. I don't remember the model number because it was a whole bunch of letters and numbers. And
typical Foxconn in the day.
Yes, yes. But this was a NVIDIA Inforce-enabled motherboard designed for the Athlon Opteron.
Oh, wow. That'll take you back.
Not Athlon. AMD Opteron, sorry. Athlon was the other one.
Yeah, but even older then.
Well, this was a single-core processor, too, supporting dual-channel memory. But on board, we had two NVIDIA chipsets. And the idea behind that was so that we could have a full 16 lanes of PCI Express for running SLI.
Wow. I don't want to steal too much of their thunder, so we'll, of course, post the link below. Go check out their beautiful Twitch cast, I guess is what you'd call that.
Yeah, I think that was a Twitch cast. It's ultimately a podcast that they broadcast on Twitch. So, yeah.
And you'll get to see Dennis's made for radio face.
Well, and considering that Hackfort is a part of the Treefort Music Festival and being socially responsible, we wore masks. So you got to see my eyes, basically.
Oh, well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I know that right now, podcasting and doing anything of that sort, well, the whole reason why Treefort was canceled. So what does it look like to do guest podcasting in the era of the COVID virus? Yeah. What did you guys do? How did it work out?
Actually, it worked out like kind of like what we're doing right now. Just we were in a room. Out of respect for the Treefort Music Festival, we donned our masks while we were being recorded on Twitch. Off screen, we were just kind of talking, doing our normal social distancing thing. So there wasn't really a lot of restrictions. We're just using our common sense because we're smart people and, just trying to stay safe.
Well, a little bit of spoilery, but I did check that out. So I've seen some of the equipment for the folks at home. Give us a quick rundown of the technical aspects. Was there anything interesting? How was it set up?
Oh,
always curious how everyone else does it.
Oh, well, we had a Blue Yeti.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the black one that has the XLR and the USB outputs.
So a newer one.
Yeah. As people that have listened to us for quite a while, back when this was the Ninja Lane podcast, we recorded on a Blue Yeti in interview mode, and it was just sitting right in front of us, and we were just kind of talking into the mic. That was kind of the way that they had their setup, so that was where audio was being recorded. There was a wasn't really a DSLR, but it was one of those all-in-one cameras that was doing video, They ran that through a PC that was over in the corner and broadcasting via OBS to Twitch. So it was really a very basic setup.
Well, I like it. And I know there was a TV in the background so you could monitor what was going on real time.
Oh, and then Nubbins came up and hung out with us for a bit. Nubbins being the cat.
Yeah, so you can check that out. One thing I do want to encourage is, unlike the show you're listening to now, those are broadcast live. So when the folks at Hackford are doing their thing, you can pester them with questions and commentary and just keep that show very interactive. And I know they would appreciate it. So you can let them know we sent you. That does make me think about other things. I mean, Treefort is a big deal for this community, and the Hackfort is a big part of our lives this time of year, especially in its normal spring slot.
Of course.
But I know we talked last month a little bit about Computex being canceled and how that had affected the world a little bit.
Yeah,
but
this was really sad for sure.
But this is a big time as we're going into the fall festival season.
Oh, yeah. So we have several festivals that, well, one of them happened last weekend. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, what, Gen Con or something
like that? Gen Con, yeah. Bigger for me than for you, I know, because I'm also a board gamer in addition to my video gaming, I guess, love, obsession, passion, time, something.
Something. As you know, I go to CES just about every year. It's one of those trade shows that is too close for us not to go to.
Yeah.
You know, being that it's just directly south from where we live. They sent out a press release claiming that CES 2021 is going to be completely virtual. And I felt that that was probably the right thing for them to do, because earlier they sent out a survey.
Right.
And the survey was basically, how likely are you to attend CES 2021? And it was a good 30 question long survey, and it was asking questions like, so what if we did this? So what if we did this? What if we did this? How should we change this? And they were really asking the people that are going to CES, what is it that we need to do to make you feel safe to go to CES?
I think that's a great approach.
And I thought so as well. And the questions were very well formed. There was a free form text field at the very end saying, so based off of your answers and your feelings, please let us know what you think. I was frank with them and basically said, if you are going to require a mask to attend CES, it's not a show that anybody should ever go to. And that's basically just kind of a safety thing, because if you need to wear one, not everybody is going to, obviously, but it's not going to necessitate that everybody will not get sick.
Well, that's very true. I mean, the masks are preventative, but that's, you know, just a piece of the puzzle, as sure everyone's aware by now, I hope.
Yeah. And one of the driving forces for going to CES is to make contacts. You know, you need to actually communicate with people. And part of the communication process is being able to see somebody's face. And that's the way that I see it. But on top of that, I also mentioned in there how out of all of the CESs that I've attended, and I think I listed a number like 12 or 14 or something like that, I can count on two fingers how many times I have not gotten sick.
Oh, no.
The fact that I've gotten sick every time I've gone to CES and coming home. I mean, it is in the flu season. You're on airplanes and stuff like that.
Well, there's a lot of touching and really tight, packed crowds.
Mm-hmm. And that's just the nature of it. But the fact that I always get sick, just because you are now going to put sanitation stations at every entrance and then check their temperatures and make sure that they can actually taste strawberries, isn't going to keep anybody from A, lying about it, and B, preventing transmission. So.
Well, and there's nothing they can do about it. And I'm sure international travelers are nervous too, because some areas are not affected as strongly as the United States is, and some are affected more. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, how do you keep people safe?
Well, the CTA, or the people that host CES, have decided that now they're not going to have the show at the convention center in Las Vegas. It's going to be on the internet.
Okay.
So it's going to be completely virtual. And I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit and speculate. They haven't released any details about how it's going to happen. But based off of my experiences at CES, I think that that is really great.
Well, I do agree. If they put all that content on there, it's probably going to be higher quality than what you'd see if you were fighting the crowds.
Well, yeah, especially if you go to a keynote, for instance, right? As a member of the press, we have a special entrance that puts us closer to the stage. You don't get front and center on the stage. And really, in some cases, you don't want to be front and center. there's always some tall person in front of you. There's always some smelly guy behind you.
Yeah.
The fact that they could have a single camera angle on the presenter and then be able to mix in video, it would be just like watching a television program.
Well, and they can rehearse too. I know they do sometimes some pretty groundbreaking stuff at, especially the keynote, but a lot of the sessions.
Yeah.
And they can, yeah, they can get it right, make sure you get the great angles, so you're not missing any of the details that you might live.
And if they go and partner with, you know, one of the, like a Zoom or a webbed meeting or something like that, one of those sort of services, they can charge tickets and then basically check attendance to get in, and then you can watch it and wherever you are.
Well, that makes sense, but I can sense the monetization of it from there. But I guess that kind of makes sense too, right? You can have a sponsor for these channels and they can play their little commercial at the beginning or the end, and hopefully not during the middle.
Well, and that's making the assumption that the keynote addresses are going to be free. As you and I both know, they check attendance to get in, and you actually have to have a valid badge to be able to watch
the
keynote. Of course, you can sit in there and record it and then rebroadcast it on your own channel later, but...
Well, and even CES released those eventually, but it was a week or so later.
But I see it as CES still needs to make money. It's still a business.
Oh, yeah.
They can't not have CES 2021 because the whole thing would go bankrupt, most likely. So chances are what will happen is we will have the exhibitors. They will be paying a certain fee like they normally do so that they can present.
Right.
The people that are not part of the media or an excluded group will likely have to pay for a ticket, but it won't be limited to the thousands or so that actually go. It will be open to a wider audience. So maybe the price will be the same. Maybe it'll be different. Maybe it'll be a price like this gets you into CES. You can watch all these different events. Right. Here's your passcode. There's a lot of options there. And, you know, if they do a free route and they have sponsors and advertisements on there, I don't see a problem with that, but it will get a little annoying listening to the Samsung guy talk about the Internet of Things and then introduction and be interrupted by, you know, Google Home or something.
Well, on the plus side, that probably means that I can get a good deal on a wall of TV, right?
Oh, yes. Because they will not be like just taking them to the show and then throwing away.
Ah, if only it was true. But I think that's an interesting model. But we have had some other shows. I mean, we were just talking about PAX is coming up, which is a show that we attended last year.
Uh-huh. And that one's going virtual as well.
It is. Now, PAX presents a little bit of a different puzzle, though, because in addition to the tech angle that we like, they also have a huge presence in video games and board games and the like.
Yep. And they are doing, well, they were just broadcasting it on YouTube, I think.
Well, that's what it sounded like, but it's a more interesting puzzle than that because the interactive piece is a little more important than the presentation angle that you'd see at CES.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I think, why we were talking a little bit about Gen Con. Now, Gen Con is a pure gaming convention designed specifically for board games, role-playing games, and other nerdy activities like those.
And how do you do that virtually?
Well, it's not quite a Comic Con, but it's in the same vein. It's maybe the granddaddy of all game conventions, if you take it that aspect. But they went an interesting angle that they did tickets that were virtual.
Uh-huh.
And all of the demos where you would normally go and you would sign up to play a game or like, and all of the sales online were hidden behind this virtual wall, if you will.
Yeah, paywall.
Well, not necessarily.
Well, if you have a ticket, you got to use the ticket to get through, right?
So you would go and you would sign up for an event. So you could wait and you could check the schedule events and say, oh, well, here's a game I'm interested in. Say Catan or something. I mean, that's a game everybody knows.
Yeah.
And they would have 5 slots available for this session. They did it so at 30 minutes before, you put yourself in the virtual queue. Then they took the first 5 people and you were in a Zoom session for most of them or a Twitch session for some. Yeah. I think Zoom was the most popular, which...
Well, you could do interaction with Zoom just like we can when working in the office, whatnot.
Now, the sad thing is that, of course, those sessions are limited to just the people that were involved. And I know a lot of those manufacturers have released a video of those gameplay sessions. Mm-hmm. I imagine if they got permission to do so.
Well, ideally, you could have your 5 players on your game and then they could broadcast the actual game on Twitch. So anybody could watch, just like somebody walking down the hall or whatever, right?
Well, I found their model really interesting. Now, I didn't get a chance to participate because I was traveling.
Yeah.
But it looked to me like the kind of cool thing. So I was postulating how that might work for some video games. Someone's got to hold the cards up to the camera for each player to see or something. But, you know, the fact that they were able to do it with something that interactive and in such small groups really, I think, is a good sign for some of these larger presentations where you can do a one-to-many model, where you might be able to do an interactive session where you'd have maybe 300 people and just take questions at the end in a moderated forum, which is, you know, pretty common today.
That brings up a lot of questions, really. You know, the immersion aspect of it, right? You know, when you're playing a board games, they're designed for user interaction, actually being in the same room. And when you remove that and you play it a little virtually, you can still have that experience, but you don't have the full experience.
Well, the social aspect is not there. And, and for a lot of the more casual gamers, you know, a lot of the appeal of a games is you sit down and you have a beer and you chit chat while you're playing or the like, and it's an opportunity to gather socially. And I wonder how that would work out. And maybe somebody out there attended virtual Gen Con and can let us know or send us a note. If you had, like, you know, four or five of you that intended to go together, how would you get in a game session together if that's even possible?
Well, we have PAX.
PAX?
Of course. PAX is going to be, if they broadcast it on YouTube, which is what I think they're going to do,
right?
On their website, they mentioned that it doesn't cost anything.
Yes.
So unlike when we had to go and they actually had scalpers giving you tickets to get in and stuff like
that.
You know, we had to pay and get in a queue to get a ticket. Well, since they don't have to pay for the Washington Convention Center or whatever, they just removed any sort of a financial liability. So now all they have to do is pay for the presentations, right?
Yeah, and control access, maybe.
And PAX is large enough that I suspect YouTube will probably just go and monetize them with different little ads that pop up just because it's on YouTube. So,
well, you know, they're going to get their 10,000 viewer minimum, right?
Oh, something like that.
Whatever it is these days.
Yeah, that may be more economical for them than actually having a real convention. I don't know if it would be the same experience, obviously, because...
No, clearly not, but it might not be bad. The one thing about PAX that I found really interesting in their press release, which we'll try to link to in the bottom notes, but it might make it better. I know you and I have spent many, many sessions trying to get PAX tickets, and it's very difficult sometimes to get them. This should expand their vision, I guess, their attendance. I thought the most interesting thing is the software aspect, because a lot of the appeal of going to PAX is getting to play games before they're released to the public.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And remember, the longest lines were things like the latest Monster Hunter and Final Fantasy games when we were there.
Well, and Borderlands 3, which
Borderlands 3.
Turned out to be a crap game, but...
So,
but there was a huge line and everybody wanted to play it.
So how is PAX handling that is the question. And the answer is kind of clever, but it puts a lot of pressure on the game manufacturers. They want to release exclusive PAX demos of these games where normally you'd be able to come and attend. Yeah. So their plan, hopefully it will work out, is to release demos. Maybe there'll be time demos where they'll only work for a specific amount of time or first level of a game or whatever. But to me, that has a much broader appeal than standing in line for 2 hours to play Final Fantasy or Borderlands for 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
At least in the PAX video game aspect and the presentation, it makes huge sense for them. I think it's going to be much bigger.
Maybe it's not even going to include some of that stuff. I mean, it might just be all of the question and answer sessions and stuff like that and whatever presentation somebody wants to put on. Like, speaking of going back to CES, CES is more than just a keynote. You have the different booths that you want to go to. And some of the appeal as a media person is to go and talk to these companies,
right?
Ask them questions. Hey, can I get a sample? Can I get some more information about this? And they're usually pretty open about giving that information to me because I'm a media person.
Well, and you can make an appointment too. So you have a one-on-one.
Right. That sort of an interaction, I think, will be key to the success of CES, for instance. You know, we'll need to be able to talk to somebody at a certain company, get on a schedule, get a virtual tour. And it might just be, hey, we're going to do a video. Sit down and watch the video for 20 minutes. And if you have questions, go and get into this chat room. And it'll be a first come, first serve and sort of thing.
Oh, interesting. Or schedule a call or something.
Yeah, which is exactly what we have to do when we're meeting, say, EVGA. EVGA is never actually on the CES show floor. They're at the Bellagio, for instance.
Oh my gosh, the death of the sideshow.
Yes, we will not have a sideshow anymore. Or if we do, it will be, hey, let's just make a Skype call at this particular time to go talk to somebody. But I really doubt that EVGA, for instance, is going to dedicate 4 days of just answering questions in somebody's office. I mean, maybe they will, and it will be great, but there's really no difference between that and me just sending an email.
Yeah, and I wonder what the difference will be between the standard press release and rah-rah product unveil video.
Yeah.
And what will replace the convention, because you don't have the ability to ask questions or touch things or talk about future state. I mean, you're just going to get the press release.
I don't know. That is the most interesting part of the whole CES going virtual thing that I'm waiting to see what will happen.
And the NDAs, Dennis.
NDAs? What are those?
What about the products that you get a preview of that you can't talk about?
Oh, yes.
Non-disclosure agreements.
I guess we'll have to give those up, won't we?
Or there'll be something different. Now, that's not entirely true, because there are today press releases and NDA conferences that happen virtually.
Oh, yeah. I get those all the time.
But the chance to look at prototypes that may never be made might be gone.
Or, we have this. What do you think? Oh, that should be in this configuration. Scratch your chin. That sounds like a pretty good idea. 6 months later, hey, there it is.
Oh, and that's a good point, because I do think they get a lot of feedback during those private sessions.
Yeah, and that is the whole reason that they're there. Because you get to see it, you get to use it, you get to comment on it. And the idea is, that's what they're there for. That's, you know, that's a basic project management aspect, actually. But still, the prototyping phase is really important in the development of the products that you and I buy.
Well, let's talk about just the audience that we're interested in, which is the enthusiast hardware aspects of all of these different conventions. Mm-hmm. And who do you think would be most impacted? What types of products really benefit from the hands-on?
Oh, anything that is hands-on. So we're going to have the component manufacturers. So we have mice, keyboards, cases. Those will be impacted the most, I think, because that is a very, well, for the lack of another term, it's very touchy-feely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can use a keyboard. Keyboards are virtually the same, but we have now a green switch. Now we have an aqua switch. Check this one out. It has a weird click at this weird range. It's like, well, I can't actually touch it. So I can't tell you, oh, that just... See, it feels weird to me, or makes my finger all numb and stuff. Cases. You can look at a picture of a case all day long. You can try buying a case at Newegg and get these five pictures and, you know, get a sort of an idea of semblance of what it looks like. But unless you put your head in there and actually see how deep it is, it's really hard to tell in a picture whether or not your radiator is going to fit, unless you read the documentation. And sometimes that's a little wrong.
Or sketchy at best.
Yes, sketchy. That's well, actually an appropriate word.
So on the opposite side, least affected, I would imagine, are things that are mostly based on reference designs like video cards and maybe motherboards.
Yeah, motherboards and video cards there isn't a lot of different innovation that happens at that stage anymore. I mean, I mentioned this on the Hack4 podcast, how the latest Z490 motherboards that came out, if you look at the highest tier across all of the different companies, there's very little difference between any one of those. They all have full coverage covers. They all have OLED screens. They all have full RGB. They all have 3 PCI Express slots.
Right.
The configuration hasn't changed. And then, of course, video cards, typically back in the day, right, they were all reference design. The only thing that made them different was the cooler and the sticker that you put on the cooler.
Well, we've moved kind of back in that direction a little bit.
Yeah, but the board themselves, it's the same GPU. It's just a different VRM, which may or may not actually impact anything. And we have the coolers that have the crazy weird fans, but they aren't running. You can't use them at CES. So the fact that you can see it and take a picture of it is really the only gain there. Storage, not much changes there. They really don't listen to any of us anyway.
Right.
Memory is kind of... memory, there's a lot of changes in memory, but again, they don't listen to us unless we want more lights or something like that.
Right.
So really, it's more or less the visual items, the cases, keyboards, mice, chairs, tables, anything you can touch. That's what is going to benefit the most from user feedback from us.
Well, I think the biggest benefit of everything going online and virtual, even though it feels like a negative, is it's going to make all of these different things a little more accessible. So if you have always wondered what CES or PAX or any of these things have been like, now's your chance. Get out there, get on the mailing list, grab that virtual ticket. I don't know. Check them out on YouTube or something. But you're going to get an opportunity, I think, unparalleled to be involved just like we are. And I think that's going to be the ultimate advantage of all of this.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.